Hi, and thank you for joining me today for this edition of Senior Talk. There is a crisis facing Maine regarding our older citizens. Research has shown that 1 out of 10 adults age 60 and older have experienced abuse in the last year. So this means tens of thousands of older Mainers experience abuse every year. Abuse is most often committed by a trusted person, including an intimate partner, adult children, and other family members. The adverse health and broad economic impacts of elder abuse are well documented. I'm very, very excited to have my guest today, Judy Shaw. She is the Securities Administrator for the Maine Office of Securities. She is a wealth of knowledge on this topic. Judy, thank you so much for being here today to discuss this.
Thank you for having me, Carol. It's so wonderful to be with you.
You're part of a group, the Elder Justice Coordinating Partnership. How did this group come about and what does it do exactly?
The Elder Justice Coordinating Partnership was established in 2019 by Governor Mills through executive order. And this partnership brought together private sector and public sector experts. And our purpose was to develop Maine's first and very historic elder justice roadmap to try to address Maine's response to and prevention of elder abuse in all its forms. I have to say, this amazing group of dedicated experts, including my private sector co-chair, Jay Martin, with the support of the John T. Gorman Foundation and the Muskie School of Public Service, worked diligently through 2020 and 2021, so that on February 4th of this year, just this month, Governor Mills was able to release this Elder Justice Roadmap.
So what does it do exactly? And I talked about the adverse health impacts. Those are pretty clear of abuse with seniors. But what are the long-term broad economic impacts of elder abuse?
So the long-term impacts, I'm glad that you mentioned health impacts, because in my job with securities and financial services, people often forget about the health impacts. Even financial exploitation results in health impacts from the stress that occurs. An individual, we often see Maine citizens that come to us have given away huge chunks of their retirement savings. So it can have an impact on their ability to pay for their housing, their ability to pay for their medication, and they can't go back and return to a career that they had before to rebuild that wealth. So the impacts are very real. They're broad impacts. The health impacts, as I said, particularly around behavioral health issues and heart issues increase, all those stress factors. So the roadmap contains a host of strategic priorities to try to address elder abuse and its impact, try to prevent and respond to it. And those priorities range from improvements to direct victim services, to public and professional education, so both the public is trained on how to protect themselves and professionals are trained on how to address the issues when they arise. It includes public policy priorities, so leaders can create a sustainable path forward for key initiatives. And data collection and evaluation, of course, is important so that we can measure the successes and identify appropriate modifications to these priorities as time goes on.
The mental health factor must be significant, as well as seniors who are taken advantage of by trusted family members. They must feel embarrassed and shame and just the stress of having someone that they trusted do this to them. Is that accurate, would you say?
It's very accurate. And I think that that also contributes to the significant number of instances of elder abuse that go unreported. When we learn that we put our trust in someone only to find that it was misplaced, as you said, we can be ashamed that we feel we made frankly, I've heard some of our consumers say, I just made a stupid decision. Oh, I can't believe I was so stupid. There's nothing stupid about it at all. You made the decision that made the most sense for you at the time, and we can't always predict the manner in which somebody is going to act. We need to be thoughtful about the decisions that we make. We need to be make sure that we're making informed decisions and be 100% sure that the person that we're going to entrust with our care or with our finances is someone that we can absolutely trust unequivocally. But yes, the stress, the depression that goes along with it, the cognitive dissonance. Sometimes we have victims who simply cannot bring themselves to believe that this person would betray their trust in that way. Our most recent criminal case, one of our victims simply would not believe us when we told her that this individual was stealing money out of her trust account. She said, no, not my Kenny. My Kenny wouldn't do that to me. And he
did.
That
is so sad. That is so, so sad. And there must be a fear factor as well. That do you think that the underreporting is partly fear that who will take care of me or fear of retaliation?
Oh, absolutely. There is always this underlying, as we get into our later life stages, we start to look at the world a little bit differently. And we realize we may have to depend on the people around us to take care of us. But there's always that little bit of nagging concern that if I open the door too wide, they're going to just decide to put me into a home, for example. We hear that frequently. We have had situations in our office where we get a report from somebody who said, I trusted my son to take care of my finances, and now he's liquidated all of my investments and put it all into cryptocurrency. And the answer when we talk to that son is, it's going to be my money someday. So I decided to handle it the way I wanted to. We need to make sure that we are always looking through the lens of the person we care about, not our own lens. And we need to make sure that the people that we trust are looking through that lens. It's about them putting our interests and our needs ahead of their own.
Wow. You mentioned direct victim services as part of the roadmap. Can you explain what that is?
Yeah, thanks for asking this question. And it can be a confusing term. For purposes of the roadmap, when we talk about direct victim services, we're talking about services provided to victims of elder abuse from a broad range of professionals. And so we might think in terms of services provided by Adult Protective Services or law enforcement or prosecutors or even my office on the public sector side. And then when we think about the private sector side, we think about the services and support provided by organizations like Legal Services for the Elderly. As much as we don't want to think about it, we have to think about domestic violence and sexual assault services, the long-term care ombudsman. Sometimes we have people who are victimized who are in a facility, and services provided by the long-term care ombudsman can provide support, and the Elder Abuse Institute of Maine, just to name a few, area agencies on aging, anybody who is going to wrap support and care around the person who has found themselves victimized, particularly if it's by a trusted individual in their life.
When you talk about Adult Protective Services, are there plans to either beef up their staff or to help them work with the cases? We all hear about Child Protective Services and how overworked they are and how there's such a backlog. Is the same thing true in Adult Protective?
I think that Adult Protective Services, one of the priority recommendations in the roadmap is for Adult Protective Services to take a broad look at the services they provide and the resources they currently have. It sometimes is easy for those of us on the outside to look in and say, well, they just need more resources. But we have to be thoughtful in our approach to that. So Adult Protective Services, certainly as a member of this partnership, is interested in taking a very critical look at the services they provide and the resources they have to be able to provide those services and make improvements as they can and as appropriate. We need to be thoughtful so that we're just not saying add more people, that will be the answer to a perceived problem, but determine what that problem may be, if there is one, and then address it.
Public education is a huge component of the roadmap, and you speak to making people more aware of what's happening. Can you touch on that, what the plan is to make the public and businesses more aware?
Certainly. There are some recommendations, certainly, that talk about improving and increasing training for those organizations, businesses, and individuals that may be mandatory reporters. And that's very important. I think sometimes people or organizations are mandatory reporters and they don't fully appreciate what that means. Around public education, some of the key recommendations focus on leveraging relationships with existing organizations and resources. So, for example, one recommendation is to work with and through Maine's amazing age-friendly communities. Maine is home to over 100 communities carrying the designation of age-friendly. And so the partnership felt this is a natural vehicle for an organized education campaign to raise awareness on elder abuse, neglect, and financial exploitation. And so some of the things that could be done with age-friendly communities is written educational materials, articles for community newsletters or websites, maybe presentations to the leaders in the communities to raise their awareness about and their knowledge about the issues that we're concerned about, as well as individual trainings for residents of these communities. Another recommendation I would like to personally highlight is expanding and creating a sustainable public awareness campaign through the use of public service announcements. Public awareness campaigns, including the ones launched by my office, Legal Services for the Elderly, and I know Adult Protective Services has done some as well, have been very beneficial both in terms of prevention of and response to all forms of elder abuse. Definitely increase reporting to my agency, but also increase the dialogue among families about these issues. We need to open the door to an open dialogue in families. So I love that the roadmap includes a sustained statewide public awareness media campaign so that people know how to identify, report, receive assistance, keep it from happening in the future.
That is really good news. That is one of the best ways to reach people. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we will talk more about the Elder Abuse Roadmap. So stay with us. Hi, we're back with Judy Shaw talking about elder abuse and the Maine Elder Justice Roadmap, which if you want to read, it's not short, I will tell you, but it's very well done and will give you a wealth of information about what's actually happening on elder abuse in Augusta. It's just Google in your search engine, Maine Elder Justice Roadmap, and it will come right up. Judy, when we left, we were talking about awareness. And on that vein, what are some of the red flags or things that people could take note of? Maybe they see someone at church and things just don't feel right. How do you know? Or can you know?
Yeah, we can suspect. Sometimes we do know. If we're close enough to the individual, we'll see those warning signs and we'll make inquiry and we will know. But most of the time, we have a good faith suspicion. And it's when things are different. If you know someone well, if I know someone at church and I see her every Sunday at church and suddenly she's not there every weekend, or now she's coming, but she usually dresses just so and has her hair done just beautifully. And now she's looking a little disheveled, maybe looks sad, maybe seems anxious. Those are some warning signs to watch out for. And if you know the person well enough that they talk to you about things like, gee, I'm having a hard time paying my bills all of a sudden. I don't quite understand where my money went, or I can't seem to locate my debit card. Oh, did I mention that this nice young man who just moved in down the street has been coming over and helping me out around the house? He did borrow a little money from me, but I think he's having a hard time, so I didn't mind lending it to him. As the conversation goes on, you hear more and more things that are out of character for this individual that you know so well. So those are things to definitely pay attention to.
If you don't know the person that well, or if you feel like you want to do more because you just suspect something's wrong, is there a nagging feeling among people? What if I make a mistake? What if I'm wrong? What if I report and then I set this whole thing in motion that I can't stop? And then what if they hate me?
Absolutely. Our lives are all about relationships, right? We're meant to be part of communities. And so we're very nervous about taking any steps that can disrupt those relationships. I often think about it this way, as I've worked with banks and credit unions over the years, many of the tellers will say to me, but I'm afraid I have a strong relationship with this customer. Well, one teller took a chance and reported that something seemed to be off with a customer and that customer was no longer coming in. And so what I did was call the local police chief and ask him to send somebody over to do a well person check. That person had been abused by a new person in their life, was holed up, being held hostage in their bedroom without food or their medication for days. And when the police got her, when EMTs got her to the emergency room, the ER doctor said she was within hours of death. So we have to think about the balance. Is my relationship so important to me that I wouldn't take a chance of saving somebody's life?
That is a terrifying story. And I know that banks have been trained to watch out for things. I don't know if that's a nationwide thing, but I know in Maine, there's been some excellent work on getting them to try to spot what's going on. Can you address that more of what the banks are actually, they're being more proactive?
Yes, absolutely. We were very fortunate to collaborate with banks and credit unions here in Maine, as well as our other partners in the domestic violence, sexual assault, area agencies on aging, legal services for the elderly. We all came together and in 2014 launched the Senior Safe Training Program. And that training program, which resulted in the enactment of a federal law, actually, has served to increase awareness and training among banks and credit unions. They have just run with it. The level of interaction, reporting, watching for red flags, watching for those warning signs, really doing what they can to protect those customers that they care so much about has just made a huge difference in the state of Maine. And I'm very grateful to the financial institutions and all of the other partners who helped make that training a reality.
When we come back, we're going to talk about what happens if you do make a report that you think someone's being abused. So stay with us. We'll be right back. Hi, we're back with Judy Shaw talking about elder abuse. So again, if you want to read this roadmap, this report, you can Google Maine Elder Justice Roadmap. There is a long version that's 122 pages. Again, very well done, not a bad read. But there's also a snapshot that will come up as you Google. That's 3 pages that will give you the gist of what this is about. Judy, let's talk about Adult Protective Services for a minute. I know that we talked about people making a report and being afraid to do that, but let's say that they do make a report and Adult Protective investigates. What happens during that call? And can you do it anonymously?
Sure. So I can, of course, speak for Adult Protective Services itself. So what I'm saying is my general understanding of the manner in which they operate. But let me tell you this. These are very well-trained individuals. Social workers, the ones I've worked with are all social workers. Social workers, I have a son who's a social worker. They are special people who know how to deal with these situations very carefully, very diplomatically. What I can tell you is any report to Adult Protective Services is confidential. They will not reveal who made the phone call. Could someone guess? If someone made a report to Adult Protective Services that involved me, who I'm going to start guessing? My sister, my children. You know, you'll go through the list. So might someone guess? Yes. But here's what's important to know. We often think Adult Protective Services is going to be, oh, it's Child Protective Services. They're going to go in and scoop my mother out of the house and who knows where she's going to land and then she'll be institutionalized. No. We all have a right to make our own decisions. And so when Adult Protective Services comes, they're going to look at the situation and they're going to say, we think you might benefit from XYZ services. Can we help you obtain those? I can say no. I have that right. I can say no. I can say no, I'm not going to let you in my house. I don't want these services. They're not going to swoop them out. They're going to try to help them understand that they could benefit from certain services that are available to them and help them get those services. And please always, always keep in mind that there is nothing wrong with calling your local law enforcement and saying, I'm concerned about my friend Judy down the street. I haven't heard from her for a long time. Could you just go check on her? They will love to do that. I call police chiefs all the time and say, would you please go check on so-and-so? I've heard that maybe he's struggling. And they'll just go and knock on the door and say, how you doing? Checking in. Just want to make sure everything's good.
What happens if the person is living with the person that you're suspecting is being abused? And I know that numbers went up because of COVID and maybe because people were more isolated with their abuser. Can you address that? How they handle that?
Yeah, very, very difficult situation, very sad situation. I got many reports of individuals during COVID having to quarantine with people who perhaps were not treating them well or taking advantage of them in some way. Delicate situation, but again, both Adult Protective Services and law enforcement are trained on how to observe, listen, determine whether there's active abuse going on, and strategizing around ways in which to protect the individual who may be being victimized. It may require multiple visits, but again, those resources are there. And I would note that the Elder Justice Roadmap in its education piece also incorporates important recommendations around increasing training for those, what I would call first responders, in on the front lines of responding to these reports of potential elder abuse as well. So that training can increase and the response can improve as well.
And we're almost out of time, but you made a couple of really good points that people are adults, and so they're not going to come in and swoop the person away. It's not like Child Protective where there are minors involved. So there's that. And also there are so many resources that if the person is taken, if the abuser is taken away, there is evidence. And in the unlikely event they are taken away, the person still won't be alone because the social workers will make sure that they have what they need. They're taking care of their resources. That's pretty standard.
Absolutely. It takes a guardianship proceeding to take all of your rights away. So always keep that in mind.
So, because you are adults, Judy Shaw, you are a wealth of knowledge as always. I so much appreciate you coming on Senior Talk today. Again, Google Maine Elder Justice Roadmap. Pick the version. They both come right up. Pick the version that you want to read, and you'll learn much more about this. There will be more to come in future shows about this, so be sure to keep listening. That's it for me. This is Senior Talk.